Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Aaron, how you doing, man?
Oh, my friend David, it's been so long since I've last spoken with you. according to Facebook, there's some big changes going on in your life.
There are.
What's going on, buddy?
Well, I'm proud to announce that the intro, our intro to the Brave Little Podcast, is no longer a lie. For those of you who know me, I've been recording from Salt Lake City this whole time, even though the intro says Sacramento. But soon that will be true because my wife and I are moving back home.
Wow.
We're doing it.
Huge news.
Yes. I've been at the company I'm with in Utah for 4 years. Lindsay and I have lived in Utah for the extent of our marriage, except for a short time when we lived in New York City. But that's about 7 years in Utah. That's for school in this job. And yeah, the truth is we're both from California. Both of us born in the Bay Area, raised in Sacramento. And honestly, it's been, well, I'll tell you this. I promised Lindsay that in 3 to 5 years after taking this job, we would go back home. We're at year four.
Oh, yeah.
And the house that we're in right now, they're wanting to sell. And they want us to buy it. We're not interested in buying it. And so we were looking at a situation of moving to a whole new place. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, having to move potentially again, if I was going to make good on that 5 year kind of expiration.
Right.
And so we decided that it was time to go back to California. So I talked to, the company I work for, terrific company, Lucid Software, and they're going to allow me to be the first employee that works full time remotely.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Now you say that you're working full time remotely. Does that mean you never have to go back in the office ever again? Or how's that going to work?
No, actually. I'm going to be traveling quite a bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I have to, part of the arrangement is this, and I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't think it was going to be a possibility. I honestly had resigned myself to the fact that I was going to have to find work in California, and that's the way it was going to be.
Well, from what I heard, I know that you didn't really want to talk about this, but I think that, everyone that's listening to this podcast, they're all friends of ours.
Yeah.
So I can say that I know for a fact you were filling out applications at all of the in and outs in the Folsom, the greater Folsom area, the greater Sacramento area, because you just wanted to come home so badly.
I have a whole list of the In-N-Out Burger locations. I'd gotten to the point, I was so low on the list of how many I was applying to. I was down in Bakersfield.
Fresno rejected you. Modesto rejected you.
Linz, I hope you like Bakersfield or Fresno or San Bernardino.
Hey, this is a true story. I actually couldn't get a job at a Jack in the Box when I applied several years ago. They rejected me and said I wasn't Jack in the Box material. So
several years
pain.
Ago. I think that was a lot of years ago.
Yeah.
Oh. I think the most embarrassing, let's see. What I didn't get a job at Baskin Robbins when I was 15.
Is that cuz you're lactose intolerant?
Yeah, part of it is cuz I told them cuz of my religion I can't serve up ice cream.
Right.
which made it difficult.
If you even take one of those little taster spoons, I mean, you're going to have diarrhea for days. So it's just best if you don't work there.
Oh, you mentioned In-N-Out, and this is a funny thing. There are a lot of things I like about Utah, and I've grown to like about Utah. The pool of California is many. I mean, it's our family. It's our where we were raised. Mm-hmm. It's the weather.
Right.
It's California. And, but I will say one thing I won't miss about Utah is the amount of terrible things that Utahns say about In-N-Out Burger. I'm not going to miss that. I'm not going to miss that one bit. It drives me crazy to no end. They've got this I get why they do it, even though I don't think it's justified. But for years and years, they have these people from California that either visit Utah or move to Utah. And all they talk about is In-N-Out Burger and how amazing it is. And eventually, In-N-Out Burger finally comes here, and there's a whole bunch of locations. and Yutons to know and talk about how overrated it is and how crappy the fries are and the burgers aren't even that good and And I'm like, look, there is not a better fast food burger than In-N-Out Burger. There's just not. They want to compare it to non-fast food burgers. Like,
wait a minute. What about the Wendy's Baconator? Are you going to tell me that the Double Double is better than that?
I'm going to be honest. I had a Baconator yesterday. I'm not even kidding. I had a Baconator. The photography is fantastic in the drive-thru. Uh-huh. The amount of bacon on it. It's like, I'm going to try this. It wasn't good.
No. It's probably the greasiest hamburger in existence.
Probably.
I don't know how they do it.
Oh, I don't either. And it's amazing that they beat Carl's Jr. to that title. but anyway, it's this thing that Utahns have, and it's their way to like push back against Californians is to be like, oh yeah, In-N-Out Burger sucks. Mm-hmm. It's not that good. And then they'll say ridiculous things like Wendy's has better burgers or McDonald's has better fries or whatever ridiculous thing it is. And I just like laugh. I'm like, okay, all right, that's fine. You can do your little, you know, dog and pony show about how In-N-Out Burger sucks, but like it is the greatest fast food burger and it's not close. It's just not close.
There's no question about it. So I was telling you earlier that my wife had a company party yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was open bar. And so the company actually provided us Uber service.
Nice.
And yeah, so it's smart. You give
responsible.
Exactly. You give your employees the option to head home without having to drive drunk. And so we took advantage of that. We actually took an Uber from the party location directly to In-N-Out so we could get dinner before we headed home. So,
did you really?
Oh yeah, that's your story. And it was about midnight and this In-N-Out had a line out the door.
Of course.
So,
so this is the thing that we used to do all the time. Now, growing up, I had friends that, you know, are active Mormons.
And I find part that hard to believe.
Believe it or not. Okay. Part of the Mormon faith is not to purchase things on Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. Like not to, if you can help it, right? Obviously, there's emergency situations and do what you got to do. But if you can help it, you know, don't make people work on Sunday if you can help it, right? And so there was this tradition that happened, you know, when I was in high school, is right at midnight on Sunday, we would go over to In-N-Out Burger because it's open till 1 a.m.
Right.
And which is hilarious because, I mean, those people were working on Sunday. they didn't have shifts that started at 12 and went to 1. But yeah, man, we would get there at midnight on Sunday, or I guess technically Monday morning. And yeah. You're not kidding, man. Line out the door. Like, that's In-N-Out Burger. They could be open 24 hours. They're going to have line out the door at 3 a.m.
Yeah. You know what the funny thing is? A lot of places where there's, you know, that kind of hype, it's the food never matches what the hype is.
Oh, yeah.
In-N-Out, it is so consistently good that it absolutely matches the hype. So I will defend it to my grave.
Yeah. Yeah, as will I. And part of this is people want to compare it to other, like, you know, restaurant burgers. And now you can't really do that. It's got to be through a drive-thru. Now, with that being said, there are these kind of fast casual style burger places like Smash Burger or Five Guys. I still think In-N-Out Burger is better than most, you know, almost all of those. I mean, any I can think of. But like people try to compare to like Red Robin and Applebee's or whatever. Still, I mean, I would argue In-N-Out is better. But my point is this. Any place that has a drive-thru, there's just not a better burger place that has a drive there than an In-N-Out Burger.
No, there isn't. And the thing that tops it off for me is that shake. Their shake is just the best. I mean,
yes.
it's a perfect shake, and it complements the meal.
It's great. Really well. It's a great shake. Now, the East Coast version of this, at one point I think people would say White Castle, but like, come on, stop. I mean, White Castle, it's garbage. But Shake Shack is the East Coast version. Shake Shack's very good. I've never seen a Shake Shack with a drive through. Shake Shack's more in line with the Smash Burger, Five Guys kind of fast casual style. And Shake Shack is really good, but like their shakes are like Dairy Queen Blizzards. They're not like actual milkshakes. And I would argue that. I know some people are probably going crazy listening to this because to them, maybe that's blaspheming. But look, Shake Shack's a fine burger. It's like $17. You get burgers, fries, and a drink. It's like $17.
Wow.
And so it's hugely overpriced.
Right.
But
now that you're moving back to California, get ready because all the prices on fast food is about
that's true.
That level.
Movies are more expensive. Gas is way more expensive.
Oh, yeah.
taxes generally across the board. It was a lot more.
Breathing air. Yeah.
Breathing air. Dude, this is like, this is what tests any of my, you know, I wouldn't categorize myself as liberal per se. I certainly have some liberal leanings. I certainly have some conservative ones. Mm-hmm. But the environmentalist part of my liberalism is really tested. Uh-huh. When I go to California just recently, and I'm purchasing some things at Target, and I have to pay for the grocery bag. and it was like, oh, this is hugely inconvenient. And I really, really don't like this.
Yeah, we've learned to love it. So we've had that the plastic bag ban for about 2 years, I think, maybe 3 years.
Wow.
In our area.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we just have the reusable bags constantly. But the funny thing is we have like a stash of them. And for whatever reason, we forget to bring them.
Of course.
90% of the times.
Yeah.
So we're just paying that extra charge, the extra 10 cents charge.
Every time.
So, all the time.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to learn to love that. Anyway. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited.
Right. Welcome Lindsay back, friend.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's going to be good to be back. You literally already, like, one of the first questions you asked me about is King's season tickets. and I'm, like, immediately jumping on and looking at it, and I'm like, ooh, man, it's going to be, like, I could probably spend, it's going to be, like, $4,000 for a couple tickets.
Right.
And those aren't like great
last
seats,
place team, right?
But it's a lot. That's what I'm saying. Is like, this is the benefits of being very bad, is that like, well, for one, they just opened the Golden One Center, right, which is right in the heart of downtown. It's a beautiful arena, and totally energy, you know, independent, self sufficient, really incredible. Now, the price of those tickets were astronomically higher, understandably, from Arco Arena. But the second that they trade DeMarcus Cousins, I mean, those season ticket prices came way down. And so I kind of want to, I want to get a benefit of that. The problem is when they get good, I'll get priced out, right? I mean,
right. But you'll also be grandfathered in. So what happens, I can tell you, as a Kings season ticket holder.
Oh, that's right. A different Kings, yeah.
Yeah. The only Kings team with the championship. and we've got two of them, just so you know.
We have one from 1959, the Rochester Royals.
The sad part is that was before blacks were allowed in the league. So
that's true.
That doesn't count.
That is true.
Yeah, that doesn't count. But as a Kings season ticket holder, we get first dibs on playoff tickets. We get first dibs on any sort of thing. And like All-Star game. So what we do is when we get that stuff, we just flip it to third parties and we make our money back that way.
Oh, so, you do?
Yeah. In our 2014 Stanley Cup run, we sold like half the tickets and it paid for our entire next season.
No way.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you'd buy them and flip them.
Oh, yeah. I guess that makes us bad fans, but I think that makes us smart. So
No, that sounds smart. Because you still got to go to some. If you sold all of your Stanley Cup tickets, I would say bad fan.
Yeah, exactly. So we didn't sell anything in the finals. We sold the rounds leading up to the finals.
Oh, okay.
And we still made, you know, several thousand dollars. The amazing thing was, we got offers for that first game in the Stanley Cup final. Someone wanted to pay, or someone was offering, I think it was $1,500 each.
Oh my
gosh.
So
we have two tickets. Like, that's $3,000 for one game.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, we didn't take it.
You didn't do it.
So, no. Mm-mm. Couldn't do it. We wanted to be there.
So you are a good fan.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow. So that's, I mean, that was pays for my season tickets.
Exactly. And that's the thing. If you do, you should get season tickets, by the way. You should absolutely get them. But even the games that you can't go to, you can put them online. You'll make some of your money back. So I think it's worth it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then plus you're looking at moving downtown, right?
Yeah.
So you'll be within, like, you know, bike riding distance of the stadium.
That's true. Yeah. We are looking at places right now that are right there downtown that I wouldn't be bike riding distance to the arena.
Yeah. Or rollerblading. We know that you're.
Oh, dude, I can rollerblade in. That's yeah. They have rollerblade lockers there. So, well,
is Lindsay a Kings fan, by the way?
She's a Warriors fan.
Oh,
she's wearing her Zaza Pachulia jersey right now.
Oh, come on, terrible.
So this is the thing. This is the thing you gotta understand. Lindsay was born in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't move to the Sacramento area till high school.
Okay.
So she lived in San Jose in an area called Hollister, just outside the Bay Area.
Great clothing line.
What's that?
Great clothing line.
Yeah, great clothing line. It's a yes, exactly. The clothing line is based off of Hollister, which is literally an onion farm in central California. it's like not near the ocean at all. Her dad, Bay Area his whole life, born and raised. So was my dad, who's a big Warriors fan as well, right? But my dad's converted to being a Kings fan, which has really proven to be a great investment. At least my dad has the Rick Barry championships from the 70s, so he's okay. Lindsay's never...
How's he taking the current Warriors run? Is he back on the bandwagon?
You know, he's not.
Okay, good.
Yeah, he likes Steve Kerr a lot, like as a player and as a coach, but like he's actually not back on the bandwagon. I'm more on the bandwagon than he is, which is amazing. Mm-hmm.
And Lindsay are cheering together when the Warriors are playing.
That's right.
Are cheating.
Look, Zaza is a clumsy individual, but he is not. That is not a cheap shot. It's just not. Like Kobe Bryant punching Mike Bibby in the face and Mike Bibby getting a foul called on him. That's maybe a cheap shot.
That was an honest foul. Had Bibby not stuck his chin out, then Kobe wouldn't hit it. That's his fault.
But you won't believe this. Lindsay's never been to a Kings game.
Kings wow. game. Has she been to a basketball game?
I'm sure Warriors. Yeah. Okay. I've not been with her, but.
That's good. That's good. Get her out to the Kings game. Maybe you'll convert her, or maybe
that second ticket. I'm gonna need someone to go with.
Right. Yeah. You know what'd be funny is if she actually hates the Kings when you get there.
Well, and they're not exactly. It's a lot easier to hate them than to love them. I'll tell you that much. Oh gosh. So yeah. Anyway, I'm.
Right on, man. So welcome back to California. We're happy to have you back.
Thanks.
It'll be interesting to see how you adjust to this home office thing.
Yeah, I'll give you updates on how that goes. I will give you updates. That's one of my biggest concerns is working remotely. I guess I didn't answer your question about traveling and working remotely. Part of this deal does require me to fly to Utah once a month for a full work week. Every month I'm going to be flying to Utah. For a full week, which is going to be helpful for the transition, especially since we're not used to having remote workers. What I'm nervous about losing is the kind of hallway conversations, the kind of being able to be there right there to give my take on something or answer a question or to ask a question. And so being there for in person for 1 week out of the month is going to be helpful to that. Otherwise, I'm considering, honestly, getting an iPad that's just kind of like the Stauffer pad. And maybe I have 3 hours out of the day from 1 to 4 or something. I don't know where it's just I'm on FaceTime. I'm just there. Live.
That's actually a really good plan. So once you're going to be flying monthly now, right?
Yeah.
Are we foreseeing some sort of United passenger reenactment where they try to kick you off and you resist and you get knocked out on the arm?
I will not go quietly in any of those situations because I know what's on the line and I know that people know to film.
You
know what I mean? And so, yeah, no, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yeah, here's the thing. If that does happen, use it for promotion. Promote the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's perfect. As they're dragging me out, I'm yelling out, at Brave Little Pod on Twitter or patreon.com/Brave Little Podcast. Let go of me, patreon.com/Brave Little Podcast.
And you have to be wearing some sort of body cam so we can post that on the Patreon page. Here's the first person view of David Stauffer getting knocked out by Sacramento airport cops.
SMF is the Sacramento airport code. SMF.
All right.
It stands for Sacramento mother. I've got a Star Wars Celebration update for you.
Ooh.
Yeah, you thought I was done. I thought I was done talking about Star Wars Celebration. You were wrong.
Yeah, for anyone that didn't listen, you went to the big celebration last month, right?
In Orlando.
Yeah.
Yep. And so part of my ticket package involved a couple of things. One of those things, by the way, involved being able to meet and get a photo with Mark Hamill, something that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And they had to like pay me back part of my ticket price because the dude was too busy to take photos of people.
Oh yeah, sure he was.
Yeah, right. But purchasing tickets, you're supposed to get this kind of swag box of things that you were supposed to be useful to you at Star Wars Celebration. Well, Star Wars Celebration several weeks ago. It was several weeks ago, and I just got that box in the mail this week. For those watching the video, timely. Here it is. yeah, I'm gonna go over what's in this. Part of it, it's amazing. I couldn't believe that. Just it says right there, Star Wars Celebration. It came with this shirt that I'm wearing, which is the artwork.
Wow.
So it's the poster from Star Wars Celebration, which includes the characters from the prequels and everything.
So did you pull that shirt right out of the box and just put it on?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right on. That's good.
Do you wash your shirts before you wear?
Oh, yeah. Several times before I put them on.
I want to go through some of the stuff in this bag, which is incredible. One of them, it's a Star Wars Celebration mug.
Oh, wow. The handle's broken. Amazing.
Yeah, already shattered. This is a little stormtrooper
beanbag, hacky sack.
Hacky sack. There you go. This one would have been really useful, actually, at Star Wars Celebration. It's a medal that Han Solo and Luke Skywalker get at the end of A New Hope, one that famously Chewbacca didn't get. And it's a hook where you're supposed to put your badges, the actual badge your passes, your tickets. And so I saw people. You know, a ton of people at the place wearing these. And I remember thinking, oh, that would have been nice to get. A Death Star beach ball.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Thought that was nice. Some pins. Some people are really into pins. And so there's these character pins that I think looks like Mace Windu, old Obi-Wan, and young Anakin.
Very nice. Are those like enamel pins, it looks like?
Yes, that's right. And lastly, probably my favorite thing other than the shirt, is this oven mitt. An oven mitt. a Ponda Baba oven mitt. Literally, those of you who don't know who Ponda Baba is.
I don't. Right,
it's the guy that Obi-Wan cuts his arm off in at the cantina scene in A New Hope.
Oh, wow. That's tremendous.
So for those of you listening, be sure to check on our actual Patreon page, we post the videos, and so you don't actually have to subscribe to watch these ones, and so I don't think,
anyway if you do.
Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't mind.
So go to patreon.com/bravelovepodcast, watch the video, you can see the Ponda Baba oven mitt, which is really something special, and if, you know what, screw it. The next person that is a paid subscriber, I want to send you this Ponda Baba oven mitt. It's yours. I'm not kidding. It's yours.
For those that
are listening that have already subscribed, I am grateful for what you've done, and we will be sending you other goods along the way. But the next person to pay us gets the Ponda Baba oven mitt. If you're an international listener, you are excluded from this deal. But I'm not kidding. Seriously, if you're listening, just sign up. $3 a month gets you a Ponda Baba oven mitt. I think it's worth it.
Patreon.com/bravelittlepodcast.
Patreon.com/bravelittlepodcast. The fine print is you do have to be a paid subscriber for at least 6 months before you get the oven mitt. okay, let's move on here. 20 minutes in. We talk about movies on this podcast because we're a movie podcast, a film podcast.
Occasionally we do. Occasionally.
We also talk about updates in our lives and other things. Mm-hmm. Now, this week was an especially egregious week for new films. We got Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, which looks to be the biggest box office bomb of the year so far. It's a $175 million budget, and I think it's going to make $18 million this weekend.
That's bad.
It's pretty bad. They say with like advertising costs and exhibition costs, you want to make 2.5 to 3x the production budget.
I don't understand like who the audience for this is.
I don't either. I mean, I think Guy Ritchie's an interesting director.
I want to see the movie, but it's not like I'm dying to see it.
I'm not. It's and what's funny is like I'm interested in Guy Ritchie. Charlie Hunnam is a good actor, I think.
Yeah, he's good.
I'm not interested in the source material, King Arthur.
Right.
I'm just not interested in another Excalibur story, I think.
No, well, we got the Disney cartoon, and that's really all we need.
That's all we need. That's all we need. It's great. Didn't we just get one of these like 10 years ago? We had another...
There's constant King Arthur reboots. So.
It's so weird that they thought we would want this. But anyway, what I'm getting at is there weren't any really good films. There is an exception. It was in limited release. A documentary was released from Academy Award-winning documentarian Laura Poitras. She released her Julian Assange documentary called Risk. And amazingly, it played at the Broadway cinemas in downtown Salt Lake. So I went and saw that. It looks like it was only playing at one theater in L.A., but it's for rent on iTunes.
Yeah, so I'll be renting that tonight or tomorrow night, and then we'll talk about that midweek here on our Patreon pod. So
we'll be doing a Patreon-only pod on Risk, and I'm really excited to talk about it. You and I both are kind of like WikiLeak heads, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what exactly the followers are, those interested, at least.
Yeah, we're WikiLeakers is what we are.
Yeah, WikiLeakers. Yes, yeah, we don't actually do the leaking, but...
Sure, well, it's dangerous to say that now because that just automatically means we're pro-Russian sympathizers.
Exactly.
We're
Putin famously chides us in our text thread. When we say anything pro-WikiLeaks or Assange, he accuses us of working for the Russian state.
Rightly so. I believe, well, we are both paid by Putin's...
Yes.
Government.
Yes, but that's for goods and services that are completely unrelated to anything government.
The official title is something holster. I don't know if we can say the whole thing on this pod, but
yeah, it's not a brave little appropriate term. But it is fine for CBS.
Very much so.
I think they still beeped it out if I remember. Pretty funny joke, by the way.
It's very funny. It's one of the funnier things that he's said on his new show. So I fully applaud
his use
of that. Colbert.
You and I are both very interested in Edward Snowden, Julian Assange. All that stuff is very interesting to us.
Yeah.
This is something of a companion piece to Citizen 4, a doc that you and I both loved. And so I'm really excited to talk about it. So those of you who are kind of like us, who are very interested in this topic and towards the idea of censorship and government information and what, you know, should or shouldn't be talked about. If you're like us, this is going to be a pod you're going to want to listen to. So patreon.com/brave little podcast. But back to no good movies. Every now and then, and I think we've decided we'll do this occasionally, if there are no great movies, but there's something in television that's worth talking about, it's, you know, we're going to do that. It's just going to be, I mean, it's way better content than if we were to get up here and talk about King Arthur.
Or
Snatched. Oh, boy. Snatched might make more money than King Arthur this week, which is incredible.
Yeah, I think they were depending on a huge Mother's Day audience. So I think that's going to push it over.
Yeah.
Over this. But they were Goldie neck Han. And neck.
Goldie Hawn is a draw.
She is. Oh, yeah, she is. Wildcats is a great movie.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that one?
I was thinking Overboard with Kurt Russell.
Oh, that's a solid one. That's a good pull.
Yeah.
I had zero interest in seeing Snatched.
Yeah, literally zero. But something came out this weekend. I say television. I guess I don't know what else to really call it. It was on Netflix. But what was that, Aaron? What are we going to talk about?
We are going to hit on the second season of Aziz Ansari's critically acclaimed Master of None.
So we are going to do that. And there's an interesting wrinkle to this is, did you watch season one?
I have not watched season one.
Neither have I.
No, I tried to watch the first episode of season one. I was bored out of my mind. And I said, never going to watch it. So sorry, Aziz.
I watched the first episode and a half, maybe the first two full episodes. And it just wasn't my jam.
Mm-hmm.
I know Skylar was begging us to watch it at the time. It just wasn't for me.
Right. So here's the thing about Skylar and television. He watches a lot of crap. I think we can be honest in saying that. He likes a lot of bad TV.
Yeah.
But,
yes, he does.
But we don't have to go into full detail just yet. He was right about Master of None.
Yeah. Okay. So he absolutely was. It's amazing. So I've watched all but two episodes. So it's 10 episodes. I've watched the first 8. You've watched all 10.
I binged all 10 today.
Oh yeah. Just today. And it came out just Friday, right? I mean,
yeah, I watched every episode today. Most episodes are like a little under 30 minutes. There's, I think, one or two that are over. There's one that's a full hour, and then at least one other, the one that's a little bit longer, I think.
Which is really fascinating. And I like that the Netflix model allows them to, you know, to have wiggle room there, you know, because sometimes it takes 33 minutes to tell the story. Sure. And like, one of the episodes was 21 minutes, which I love.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I like that they have that room, like you said, and he's free to explore whatever he wants to do. And I think that he's proven himself, especially with this season. I need to really go back and watch season one now, because season one was so good. Our season two was so good. Yeah. But I think that he's proven that he can do whatever he wants, creative wise. So
yeah,
bravo to Aziz. And I think we're both fans of Parks and Rec, right? His Tom Haverford character. And so that's kind of what I was going. I went into season one thing and like, do I really want to see a full season of Tom from Parks and Rec? And then I don't find Aziz particularly funny in his stand-up. So those two factors really did it in for me in that season one. So.
Well, isn't that what's fascinating here is because I'm not a big fan of Aziz's stand-up either. I think his stand-up monologue in SNL was very good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the funniest his stand-up's ever been to me. And I've watched a couple of his specials.
Yeah.
And it's just not my type of comedy. It's just not, you know, not my cup of tea.
It doesn't work for me either.
No.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me either.
But he does something in the show that is, it's like, I don't know how to put it. It's almost, I don't want to say like a delicacy, but it's almost like each episode is just this really, really fine piece of art. Or that sounds so pretentious to say, but like each episode does this amazing combination of being lighthearted and funny, but having this like really true, authentic message that kind of resonates. And being able to do that balance is so difficult. And I don't know if this is more Aziz or more Alan Yang, his co-showrunner. Mm. I don't know exactly who's responsible. Maybe it's a little bit of both. Obviously, Aziz is like the face of it. But like, it could be something Alan Yang is doing. But these things are just so expertly written that each episode is something that is not only really good, but I could see myself rewatching in the future.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Like, this show is, it's a comedy show. And make no mistake, there's a ton of funny moments. Like, that's what I really appreciate about it.
Yeah.
Is throughout the entire thing, there are very funny moments. but it is extremely complex. And that's what I think that I truly appreciated it for. It has depth. And I totally, like you said, I can see myself 100% going back and rewatching these episodes and looking for stuff that I missed the first time around. Because, you know, there's so many layers here, and there's really great writing, really great directing, and performances are strong. So I'd like to experience it again.
So, I mean, our recommendation here is to not just watch this, but binge this. Binge it, enjoy it, take it in. It's a really, really, I'll put it this way. Netflix has been pumping out content just at this rapid rate.
Oh, yeah.
And with varying levels of quality. And it's still pretty amazing, their model and everything they're doing. But occasionally you come across something that you're like, oh, wow, everything about this was executed at a certain level that you're not used to. And that's kind of what's almost like startling about Master of None at first is you're like, oh, wow, this is, like you had mentioned, incredibly thoughtful and with a lot of depth. This wasn't something that was quickly just rammed through a writer's room.
No.
Yeah.
I think that it deserves all the praise that it's going to get. And you can see in this show, you can see the seeds of what influenced him. Specifically, I'm talking about the series Louis C.K.'s FX original series. You can see that was like kind of the grandfather for a lot of these modern single camera comedy drama, like these comedy series that kind of like exist on the line between comedy and drama. And I would say Louis is actually more drama than it is comedy. Whereas Aziz is pretty much, it's a comedy first, and then there's dramatic elements from his life, romantic elements as well. But for me, Louis, that series is like, that's one of my favorite series that I've ever seen. And so I can see the influence that it had on a series like Master of None, and I appreciate what they've done how they've consumed that and molded their message in a similar fashion, but you know, they made it their own as well. So I appreciate that.
So I want to go, I want to, you know, not do a full deep dive, but I want to talk about some of the highlights. And so we're going to be going into some spoiler territory. I don't think, at least I'm not planning on talking anything that's like deeply spoiler.
No, I don't think we need to.
And so, I mean, if you're someone who really doesn't want to hear anything, you know, I would understand. And now would probably be the time to tune out. But we'll just talk about some moments that we liked. It shouldn't really, again, this won't affect any like the character arcs or storylines or anything like that. But I'm going to kick this off with the very first episode, which is this black and white ode to Italian cinema. This was the moment I realized, oh, this show might be special.
Oh, 100% agree.
Yeah.
It takes place, like I said, I didn't watch the first season, so I don't know how it played out, but you do get the refresher course to start off the series, and you find out that he had this relationship and he broke up with this girl, and he decides to go to move to Italy. And follow his passion, which apparently is to make pasta.
Yeah.
And so that's where season two starts off. He's in this little town in Italy, and making pasta and just living this Italian dream, essentially. And the first episode is completely in black and white. It's really, really well done. I mean, it's masterfully shot, masterfully directed. The performances are really, they knock it out of the park. All the characters, all the actors. And the writing is just so sharp. The jokes are funny. Aziz is like, I feel like he's in his element right here.
Yeah.
And,
The relationship,
it's just a home run of an episode.
It's really great. The way it was shot, which Aziz directed this episode.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah. I think he directed like five of them.
Okay.
But, I really like how, you know, he directs some, Eric Wareheim directs some of them. Which it's interesting seeing Eric from Tim and Eric's awesome show, Great Job, who is a literal towering figure to Aziz's. This is the thing about Eric Wareheim, and he's not in episode one. He comes in episode two in a big way, which is kind of like his main episode, I feel like.
Yeah.
Eric Wareheim is not a great actor.
No. Funny though, he's hilarious.
He's really funny. So he has these moments that are hilarious, and it gets better throughout the season. But in this first one, it really requires him to be like, to have these moments. Like there's a moment where we're walking through the supermarket, and he's like trying to have just like a casual conversation, and it feels kind of stilted. Like
yeah, it does.
He's not a great actor, but he's so funny.
It's hilarious. And again, talking about the influences that the show has is his relationship with Eric is very much, I think, directly influenced from like Woody Allen movies.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Woody Allen is just walk and talk, especially where he's walking with and talking with one of his friends, like a best friend, similar to the Eric character, and they're just talking about life in general. And I think that they directly pulled that from Woody Allen movies, and they pull it off. It's great.
Oh yeah. Another thing about the first episode is, and I don't know that this is necessarily an overt theme throughout. I think it's maybe one of kind of several mini themes, but it's this relationship between Aziz and technology. and what I mean by that is that he has this encounter with this woman, and like you're kind of rooting for, you know, him to have something, you know, kind of this relationship or this spark with her. And he gets her phone number and tentative plans for this next weekend. And then the phone gets stolen. And the reality is like, you know, in like, I guess in the olden days, either you write down that information or you have it somewhere else. And it's not just contained within a phone. Now, granted, the reality is he should have been able to get a new iPhone, and an iCloud backup would have had her phone number just in there. It would have been fine. But we won't get into the technical details. But like there's a lot about technology in this, between that just technology getting in the way in that way, and also in his dating apps later on.
Oh yeah.
And the way that people communicate and rely on that technology, which is really interesting.
It is. I didn't even consider that, but you're absolutely right. And throughout throughout the entire series is basically the relationships that he has over text message.
Yeah.
And we've seen that before in a million other movies and TV shows. And most of the time it sucks, to be quite honest. It's really boring, and it's I wish that they wouldn't include it. But for this, I think it's vital. And it really does speak to the modern relationships between women and men and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
This is how we communicate today. And yeah. whether it's unfortunate or not, that's the reality of things. And we see that Aziz struggles with this because he's consumed by it. And the way that things play out, it's pretty interesting.
Well, and they talk a lot about it, too. There's this yeah. episode later with this this woman named Francesca where he's explaining to her that he sent this follow-up text to this girl about with this line about being jealous of the pillow that you get to hug that night or whatever. And she makes fun of him because that's right. such a cheesy line. But then he's like, oh, that line got me a second date. So who's wrong? Right. But he's like literally asking for validation of if that line worked or not in text form to that person. And then that line comes back later. And one of my favorite moments of the whole series of yeah. the eight episodes I've seen is that, you know, that woman, Francesca, sends that line to him later on in the scene where they're taking an Uber, just, you know, and this is someone he doesn't have a relationship with, but you can tell that there's this, you know, there's a chemistry there and a tension that, you know, she gets dropped off. She texts him that same line. And the scene, it's got to be 4 to 5 minutes, 4 to 5 minutes of yes. him, of real time Uber ride, where he's sitting there not saying a word, mm-hmm. thinking about Francesca. She yeah. sends him that text. You see it and he looks at it and you know what it means. You know, the moment of what's going on.
Yeah.
And you sit with him all the way until the Uber ride takes him home. And right. you know what? There's not a wasted second in that entire scene.
No, there's not. And, you know, I think that we can all say that we've been there before, right?
Like yeah.
This feels like a page out of every person's life
yeah.
nowadays. And that, again, I mean, I keep talking about this, but I think that's directly influenced by the end of The Graduate.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember, you remember the end of The Graduate?
Oh, totally.
When they speed off on the bus and yep. then they're like, yes, we got away. And like, uh-oh, what do we do now?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the camera just focuses on them. And I think that's where they borrowed that scene from. But it's great. I think that it's a perfect way to end that episode, especially their interactions together. So there's so many little moments like that. They're just magical, for lack of a better word, the way they work out.
Yeah. It's really bold. And you don't see this type of, you know, I know those types of bold moves in just like regular cable drama television.
No,
you're just not seeing it.
And I think that's a good point why you bring up whether we can call it a TV show or a Netflix yeah. show or a movie, because this feels like a very long independent film.
Yes, it does.
It's what it feels like.
Oh, it sure does. Yeah.
And I think that's what they're going for in the feel of it. And I think it's just so well made, man. I love it. I just love it. And I think about how many other movies or how many other shows that are out there that I've missed because I prejudged. I went into it prejudging. Aziz, and you know, I'm kicking myself right now for not watching that season 1.
Yeah, well, it's there. That's the thing.
That's the beautiful thing about it. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back and watch it now.
You know, there's a couple other episodes I want to touch on that I thought were especially great, and one of them is an episode called "I Love New York," mm-hmm. and this is an episode that barely has Aziz in it at all, or any of the main characters.
Right.
It has him at the very beginning, and he's walking by this building. And essentially, the camera literally moves from Aziz over to a doorman at this building. And the episode then travels, you know, kind of with that doorman for about 5 to 10 minutes. And then it goes to several other people that work in kind of service industry. And in each of these cases are minority, you know, ethnic minority characters. But it kind of gives almost like a day in the life a little bit, or a moment in a day for a few different individuals, and it is right. compelling television or film or whatever we're gonna call it. It's this episode was incredible.
It's, you know, it's probably my second favorite episode of the entire season.
Yeah.
Like you said, we change perspectives throughout the entire thing. There's a flow to it, and it's really interesting the way it plays out, and I gotta applaud them for taking the chance to spend an entire episode like this. Now, this reminded me of the first season of the series Atlanta.
Oh,
where
yeah.
There was an episode specifically, I think it was 4 or 5, where they changed the perspective to the female character. I can't think of her name right now, but
yeah.
the girlfriend, Donald Glover's girlfriend. I can't think of her, or the mother of his child, where she's like the main character that whole episode. And
yeah.
we don't even see Donald Glover. I don't think, maybe once. But yeah, it reminded me of that. And it's like a similar thing where where the narrative is actually turned on its head for a minute, and we could take a break from the main storyline, which I thought is really interesting, a bold choice, and it really worked. So I applaud them again.
And it's a great where the episode hits. It's right in the middle of the season, and I think it's just right at the perfect moment. Another episode I really liked was one about religion. I think it's the third or fourth episode.
Yeah.
That was another really authentic and heartwarming episode, especially about, you know, Aziz's parents who are devout Muslims, and he is not, you know, religious, you know, at least in that way. And it's interesting the way he talks about like having to fake be religious when like extended family is there, pretending that he fasts for Ramadan, pretending that he does his prayers. And then when he decides to just not pretend anymore and the repercussions of that, it's really, again, really well thought out, a lot of depth to it, but powerful.
Feels authentic. And I love the way that it manifests itself in that episode. It's like literally over a piece of bacon.
Yeah.
Or like a crispy pork sandwich, crispy pork sandwich. Like that's the catalyst for all this stuff, which is great. Like, and that's basically how life works, right? There's not usually these huge gigantic moments. It's like these little things about life that ring true, and that's what I love about the series, the way that they capture them.
Yeah,
so
it's really great. Well, that's mostly what I had to say. Were there other points of Master and None you want to touch on?
Some of the other things that you talked on or you spoke on for in passing was like the fact that this is a series that's basically centered around a minority or minority characters. Yeah. I think that we need to recognize that. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with having another white protagonist, but, you know, this is reality. Aziz is Indian, right? Indian-American. I think he was born in the South. South Carolina, right? And I think this series is true to his, I would hope that it's true to his experience, his daily experience, where, you know, he just lives a normal life. It's not... He doesn't go out of his way to say that, you know, he's proud of being Indian. He just is. And the way that he lives his life is just like a normal person. And that's how a lot of people that are minorities live their life. It's not a matter of waving a flag. Although if you want to, that's fine. You can do that. But it's not a fact, or it's not a requirement that you have to tell white people they're wrong or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's Aziz just being Aziz. And that's one of the best things about this country is that you're free to live however you want to live. Right. And I think that, that we get a peek into, his specific, experience as being an Indian American. And so I think some of the other themes that they touch upon is he has a lesbian best friend.
Yeah.
That's a very powerful episode where the episode revolves around this Thanksgiving dinner that Aziz goes to. This girl's mother and aunt and grandmother host every year. And they go back, I think, 15 years. And then over time, it's just like the next chapter is the next year. So it's like starts in like the late 90s. And then the final part of the episode is modern day Thanksgiving. And throughout the years, you see how these two characters change, how this girl, I mean, how she comes out to her mother and her aunt.
Yeah.
How she interacts with them and her experience as being a lesbian black woman. So I thought that was a really interesting episode. It feels like it felt authentic and honest to me. Obviously, I don't have experience with that. But it didn't feel like they were clubbing anyone over the head. They were just being honest about it. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think it's important that's how the message is delivered.
It's a great episode. I also love how they touch on there's these cultural touchdowns through each of the Thanksgivings. And one of them in particular, they're talking about O.J. Simpson. and there's this great line about how anytime, you know, a black man, you know, gets ahead enough in life that he marries like a white woman, that, you know, the white culture tries to, you know, push him down.
Right.
And this is the conversations that the girl, the main character in this episode, this girl, but her mother and aunt and grandmother are talking about. And the girl's like, what about Clarence Thomas? and the mother and the grandma was like, F that guy.
And this is okay. That's another good point. Like, the show maintains its humor throughout the entire run.
It does.
It's so important, because if you don't maintain that humor, you absolutely run the risk of being preachy.
Yeah.
And no one wants to be preached to while you're watching a series like this. Yes, they're tackling an important subject.
Yeah.
With important subject matter that's poignant to today and to, you know, forever, basically. But we don't need another preacher. We want something to relate to, because that's how your message gets absorbed, I think, at least.
Yeah, no, totally.
That's my feelings.
So. A lot of this feels autobiographical to Aziz. I mean,
I think that it is. It has to be.
It has to be, right? I mean, and I think there's some humor. He names his character Dev. Mm-hmm. And Aziz, he's got a kind of an ongoing bit, and he actually mentioned this in a podcast he did with Bill Simmons this past week about how, like, Dev Patel gets all of the dramatic Indian roles and he's just like, I don't even get to audition for them because they just go straight to Dev Patel. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that has anything to do with why he named his character Dev in the show, but it'd be hilarious if it was. I mean, it's funny. A common Indian name, but
right. Is there anything about the series that you didn't particularly care for? Because I was trying, like, when I got to the final episode, I was trying to think back of, like, was there any misfires? Were there any, like, sour notes in this thing? Because, you know, no one wants to hear just effusive praise about something.
Yeah.
And I was really stretching to figure out, like, what didn't work. You know, I mean, not every joke lands, which is normal. But I think for the most part, we're talking like a 95% success rate on jokes, and some to the point where I'm laughing out loud. That's rare for me.
Oh yeah. there was funny stuff. I mean, I was laughing at like this random side in one of the episodes. There's this side story with this, I don't know if he's Korean or Chinese, but mm-hmm. the father of, one of Aziz's friends, he's got two women.
That was great.
I was laughing so hard, and at the very end, where he talks about how he came to an arrangement where they're both going to be okay with, because ultimately, old people at his age just want companionship, you know. And right. Eric Wareheim is there, and he's just like, "My man," you know. And what's funny about that is, in the end, they weren't okay with it.
Which, right, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
That was funny to me. That whole thing, like, you know, the good cooking and the dog were the things right. that, you know.
And, you know, that's a good point, because a lot of this throughout the entire series or throughout the entire season, you're seeing jokes that are set up. You're seeing storylines that are set up, and you're thinking, OK, in real life, it doesn't play out this way.
Yeah, exactly.
And then by the end, it didn't play out that way. They were honest about it. So, and you really appreciate it. And it's a surprise that it doesn't play out, you know, with a happy ending necessarily every time. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would say in terms of the knocks, I don't even think I'd consider these knocks necessarily. But maybe, I missed, after the first two episodes, I did miss being in Italy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah. So I eventually got over that, and it was okay being in New York, because New York has plenty, you know, of character and culture. But the Italian stuff was just done so well. Mm-hmm. And the episode, I guess the second episode in Italy, which revolves around a wedding, which felt mm-hmm. very Woody Allen-esque. But like that whole episode, and Eric Wareheim is as absurd and as crazy as you'd expect him to be. It still worked really well, like emotionally. And the fact that he's going to an ex-girlfriend's wedding and she's marrying a guy that looks just like him, or as he calls him, maybe even a fake Arnold.
Yeah. I think that episode has the most jokes, and I think... looking back, it's definitely the funniest episode for me.
Yeah, so. It probably was, especially when they get the car stuck.
Oh gosh.
Because you've been to Italy, I've been to Italy, and I've driven around in Europe, and there are these tight spaces, and they're looking at this turn to go around. They're like, yeah, there's no way the car's gonna make it, and this truck goes by and just easily turns. You know?
I love the absurd moments that they have, and that's one of the things, like, having visited Italy for about a week, seeing those first couple episodes, like, it took me right back.
Oh yeah.
And it made me want to visit again. Yeah. So,
it totally did. So I missed being in Italy, because there was something about the way they even shot it and culture. I mean, it just really captured it. The second thing is like, don't watch this show on an empty stomach. Because, like, in real life, Aziz and Eric Wareheim are like foodies. You know, it's funny because, you know, it'd be great to have Skylar on the episode. Skylar is literally has Tim Heidecker and Eric Wareheim's phone number.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot. He was on one of Tim Heidecker's shows called On Cinema at the Cinema that Skyler flew down to L.A. to shoot. Last time Tim and Eric were in town, he hung out with them and went to like a restaurant with them. And, you know, he's got a photo with him sitting between Eric Wareheim and Tim. And he says that Eric is just like a foodie. And then he told me at the time that he hangs with Aziz Ansari and that all they do is just go out to eat at like these fine dining, you know, restaurants. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely captured in the show. That's all they're, I mean, they're going and eating food and taking photos of them. And like
constantly. Yeah.
But like between the pasta making, which Alan Yang, I read in an interview, said that like Aziz is like actually legitimately a great pasta maker.
Mm-hmm.
Between the pasta making, there's so much food in this show that like it's a hallmark of the show that like, man, I was after the it was the religion episode, I was ready to eat barbecue. I was ready to get pasta after some of these Italian episodes. I mean, it's just it's food, and now he works this Food Network, right. Which reminds me, I knew for sure you were gonna love this show when I hit the episode that had Bobby Cannavale.
Oh yes.
I was like, oh, Aaron's gonna love this.
Yeah, one of my absolute favorites. I love his turn in this, and while I didn't, I'm not going to spoil the last episode, but I'll just say that Bobby did a great job.
Okay,
Bobby did a very, very good job
because he's kind of a bombastic series. Kind of like this, you know, this producer, this kind of television personality that's very like, whoa, bam, you know, in your face.
Yeah, he's kind of like a Bobby Flay, Guy Fieri composite, but then also like a. Anthony Bourdain type, like a mixture of all those guys.
Yes.
But he has very over the top, very loud, and very big, like a very big presence.
Very big presence. So. And John Legend is in one of these episodes. Oh, yeah. And Bobby Cannavale tells him to go play the piano in a way that you know John Legend hates it.
Of course. Oh, and then he boos him after the performance, which is perfect.
It was great having him there. I loved that he hosted a show called Clash of the Cupcakes, and that especially when he was on a date where that woman runs into who like an old flame who is a war photographer for the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, oh, I host a show called Clash of the Cupcakes. It's a different, you know, we're fighting a different kind of war.
Very funny. And that's a good point, because a lot of the relationship stuff in this series is incredibly funny, and it makes me so very happy that I was a married man before any of this Tinder stuff or any of this stuff came to be, because it seems so stressful to be honest.
It does. I was, you know, similarly married, you know, long before Tinder came to be, but like watching like the number of first dates that he goes on, and there are a couple people on my team at work that are big into Tinder. Mm-hmm. And both of them that have been in relationships, you know, from Tinder, they've had, you know, success with it, but they go on a ton of first dates, a ton of them. And you're basing it off of, you know, basically a match of a profile picture and a few photos and basic limited information. And then the chat begins from there. And it does, dude, it looks so stressful. Like,
yeah, it doesn't seem fun.
No,
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's fun in the beginning, but after a while, it's got to grate on you.
Oh, it's got to. Well, there's the one episode where there's just a montage of so many these dates that he goes on with these women. And it's really fascinating to see like the successful versus the ones that are clearly unsuccessful and how hilarious that is. It leads to one of the funnier moments for me, where a woman is on her phone and she apologizes that it's an emergency. But then he hears the sound of like the
dating app.
Yeah, the dating app, whatever they call it, the flipping through, or I don't know, I forgot what the term is, a swiping.
Yeah,
it's the swiping sound. And he's like, wait, are you on the app? And she goes, yeah. And she explains, like, there's enough night time in the evening that she might be able to get set up on another date that night. And he's like, what the heck? And she's kind of like unapologetic, you know? And then she asks his opinion about a guy, and he's like, he looks kind of dumbfounded, and he's like, all right, well, let's look at the photos. And then he begins to... to help her look at it. It was a pretty funny moment.
Very, very, very good use of phone technology, text messaging. It's because, like I've said, I mean, we all know that we've seen it in movie and in TV before, and it usually sucks. It's like a waste. But I think that they captured it really well in this.
They captured it without having to do the text message on screen.
Yep.
Being written out, they actually show it on phone.
Right.
both emails and text messages, and it's, yeah, like, to your point, really well done execution of implementing that technology without it seeming fake or overbearing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really well done. So
yeah, so I think it's safe to say that we both loved season 2 of Master of None.
Yes. Please check it out. Yeah. I was going to say if you don't have Netflix, but you all do. So
everyone has Netflix. If you don't, let me know. I'll add you on as a profile.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Look at that. We look out for our brave little people.
Yeah, just hit me up on Tinder, and I'll add you to that profile.
If you match
swipe right on
Tinder. Well, we are at an hour. We did have news headlines we're going to go over, but I don't know that we have time.
No, we can save them for the Patreon pod.
We'll save them for the Patreon pod. I think that's a good way to go. So yeah, go see Master of None. We'll be talking Risk and some headlines. And yeah, Aaron, anything else on your end?
No, I think we hit it all. I'll just say welcome back to California. And when's the move date? Do you have a move date?
Dude, yeah, it's going to be like in 2 weeks.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Look, everything you're seeing in here needs to be packed up like right now. And it's not. It's not backed up.
Yeah, you actually did. You actually unpacked a box to take that T-shirt out of.
I'm going to have to repack that right after this and then put it on KSL. Unless someone subscribes to Patreon and then I can give them this Pwn de Baba oven mitt. I'm telling you guys, this thing is really terrific. I think this is worth the $3 a month.
What you got to do is post a picture of that on our Twitter feed.
All right, I'm going to do that. I'm going to post a picture of that on Twitter. I'm also going to make this my profile pic on Tinder.
Very smart. Very smart.
All right. Aaron, I appreciate your time, man. And,
yes, sir.
I'm glad you watched Master of None. I was hoping you would, and I'm glad we did this episode. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I apologize to Skylar. I was wrong.
Yes. I apologize to Skylar. I was wrong as well.
But I will never watch BoJack Horseman.
Yes. Literally a show that Skylar says is better than Breaking Bad. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Speaking of Breaking
BoJack
Bad.
BoJack Horseman. Come on.
Quick plug, though. Better Call Saul right now is peak. At peak Better Call Saul.
To be honest, I haven't even started the season. I'm saving them up. So.
Okay. It's a slow burn. It can be taxing at times, but right now it's paying off in a big way in season 3.
I'm ready.
So. Awesome. Well, that's it, folks. As we say, hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.